Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 4th of January. Scott Walker is now the 45th governor of the state of Wisconsin. Republicans control both houses of the legislature, and they are in special session already today. The governor, during his acceptance speech yesterday, said that his top three priorities are simple: jobs, jobs, and more jobs. He said that the expanse of government is failing us. He believes in limited government. Wisconsin, reiterating a campaign theme, is open for business, and economic growth and vibrancy will be the hallmarks of his work during the first 4 years. And we're going to be talking about rebuilding the economy, how we get 250,000 new jobs by 2015 in the state of Wisconsin. And he also said that an increase in taxes would be off the table. Of course, there are large expenses and a huge deficit, the expenses coming primarily in the form of aid to schools and also to Medicaid and prisons in this state. Can any of those be cut? And what will create jobs? We thought we would go to the jobs guy, the first hour of our program today, Tim Sheehy, who for 18 years now has been president of the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. He, before becoming president in 93, was responsible for regional economic development, governmental affairs, and other operations. He is vice chair of the American Chamber of Commerce Executives. Prior to joining the MMAC, he worked as a legislative assistant to U.S. Representative James Sensenbrenner in Washington. And he also did a congressional internship. We'll be talking with Tim about jobs primarily, our phone number, and we welcome your phone calls. What regulations do you believe that Wisconsin businesses may be facing that inhibit job growth? What kinds of jobs can we create here? What kinds of companies? The governor in his speech yesterday said that companies all over the world are welcome to come to the state of Wisconsin to set up their businesses. Will there be any takers? What would entice them to come to our state? We welcome your phone calls. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. And hour number two of our program today, Joseph Ellis, a wonderful historian, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Founding Brothers and American Sphinx, has written a totally engaging book about two totally engaging people, Abigail and John Adams, and his book is First Family. That will be hour number two of our program. Tim Sheehy, haven't talked to you in a long time. Hi, thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you. 250,000 jobs, the governor said yesterday. His administration is all about jobs and jobs and jobs. How are we going to get them to Wisconsin?
Well, he has, and one thing I've learned over the years working with Scott Walker in the legislature and as county executive here is there are no surprises. Whether you like what he is pursuing or don't like it, one thing is certain, that he does what he says he's going to do. So when he talks about focusing on jobs, I have no doubt that he's going to do that. Having said that, it's a tall order. We're entering, I think, a rebound in the economy, but I think it's going to be slow from a job growth perspective. So the state of Wisconsin, as is true of other states, have their work cut out for them, and I think that it is the right focus for the state. It's what drives the revenue that we use to support a number of programs around the state that are critical to our quality of life. So I think it's the right focus. And I think there's a very simple answer to a very complex question about how do you create these jobs. And the simple answer is we focus Wisconsin's policies and we focus Wisconsin's effort on companies that export goods and services outside the state. That is the only way we're going to see new growth, new income, and new jobs in the state of Wisconsin. If you think about it, those companies that export a good or service outside the state, doesn't have to be overseas, but it needs to be outside the state, are the way in which we create jobs for suppliers in Wisconsin that provide goods and services to those companies. And it's the spending of the folks that are employed exporting goods and services and those supplying those goods and services that create the other jobs in the state, the jobs attributable to education, to tourism, to retail. And so if we really want to get this right, and I think the governor understands this, we need to make sure that Wisconsin is hospitable, that it is stable for people that are trying to paddle in a global economy.
And what about, do we have a basis of those kinds of goods and services in this state, and we just need to help them so they can export more? Or are we talking about creating a whole new economy?
No, we're not talking about creating a whole new economy, though I think Wisconsin has to do place a greater emphasis on growing new companies in these areas. But we're really well positioned. Wisconsin is about 17th in the U.S. in terms of its export prowess. And we have our number one trading partner is Canada, number two is Mexico, three is China, four is Japan, I think Germany. And Wisconsin is blessed with a lot of expertise in exporting. It's one of the values of having a lot of manufacturing. But it isn't just manufacturing, and it's not just large companies. I'll give you a good example here in the Milwaukee area, a well-known company here, Bucyrus International. They manufacture mining equipment. 80% of their customers are outside the U.S. In Wisconsin, Bucyrus has over 200 suppliers that employ 15,000 people. So the success of Bucyrus exporting from Wisconsin mining equipment supplies a huge number of small businesses with an opportunity to provide services and parts to Bucyrus. The same is true for a company like Baird or Northwestern Mutual, Oshkosh Truck. There are lots of companies, employers, small and large around the state, that primarily export goods and services. So Wisconsin gets the drill really well. We just need to, I think, focus on creating more stability here, getting the budget deficit under control, matching, getting education to work again, matching the needs of employers. And I think Wisconsin is actually pretty well positioned to compete.
I'm looking, Tim, at a letter that you wrote to President Obama back in June 29 of 2010, asking for help for 1,000 families supporting jobs from Bucyrus Erie. And the Bucyrus contract hinges, you said, on the U.S. Export-Import Bank providing a financing guarantee. Whatever happened with that?
Well, actually, there's good news in that story. The administration, Obama administration, did respond. They did help finance a customer's purchase of almost $900 million worth of mining equipment in India, and the result of that is a tremendous ripple effect to suppliers all over the state of Wisconsin, not just here in Milwaukee. So again, it's a great example of how government can help on the margins in employer export equipment or services, and the result is the creation of jobs not only Bucyrus, but at their suppliers, and those suppliers then need the services of people to educate their kids, to keep the streets clean, to provide medical services, and you kind of see how this flywheel starts to create the 250,000 jobs that the governor's talking about.
Mm-hmm. When you use the phrase hospitable to business, what do we mean by that? Are we hospitable to business in Wisconsin?
Well, I think we have been off and on over the years through both Democratic and Republican administrations, and I'm not picking on one or the other. The line in the song comes to mind, clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am stuck in the middle. And I think that what businesses are looking for is stability. They want to understand that their taxes aren't going to bounce all over the place. They want to understand that the state is providing the education for the young people that they're going to hire. They want to understand that there's a good connection with workforce. They want to understand that regulations aren't going to bounce all over. And if you think about it, what an employer is looking for, they're competing in a very turbulent global economy, and what they want is stability on the boat that they're sailing. And Wisconsin has the ability to provide that kind of thoughtful stability and back up their ability to compete.
The governor said yesterday that an increase in taxes is off the table. Can he adhere to that?
Well, I started the show out by saying, you know, one thing I've never been surprised about Governor Walker is he does what he says he's going to do. And if he says he's not going to increase taxes, I'll take him at his word. That is a tall order in a state that is running a little over a $3 billion budget
yes.
deficit. It's going to make some difficult spending priorities. But I think it can be done. And I think the growth, if we can get Wisconsin back on the path to grow at a greater pace than it's been growing, those new revenues can support the spending that the state has. And so I think the governor understands this. You can't cut your way to prosperity. We need to return the Wisconsin's economy and employers to growth. That's going to provide the revenue that we need to support the services that are important here.
When you look at that deficit and you look at where the vast majority of spending is, it's in education and health care and prisons in this state. Can we anticipate cuts in those programs? Can you get rid of the deficit and grow business fast enough to keep those programs vibrant?
Yeah, I mean, what I guess what I've learned over the years watching and working with state government is it's not so much that you have to gut programs or cut programs, but we certainly can't have them growing at 5%, 6%, 7% a year. We've got to get state growth back down under the rate of inflation, and so I think. You're going to see an effort to cut some programs, but most of this, I think, is focused on moderating the spending increases and getting at some of our longer-term issues, the long-term liability costs that are associated with pensions and some of those other issues. And if the state can do that and give us a chance to grow a little bit, I don't think that the cuts are necessarily need to be drastic.
Governor Walker mentioned former Governor Tommy Thompson yesterday when he was looking at a governor who had created, and I can't remember the number, but it was over 250,000 jobs. What can he learn from that administration?
Get elected when the economy's on a rebound. and I think that, again, I don't mean to be flip about it, but I think that, you know, state government can have an impact on the margin, and it's an important margin. But the responsibility for growing jobs and the impetus for doing that is going to come from employers, as I said, that are here, that are competing on a global basis. It's going to be determined by our ability to start and grow more companies that fit that profile. And so what I think the governor can do is a lot like the UW line, and that is really clear the way for business. Open the doors, create some stability, and give employers the room to run, and that will help Wisconsin grow the jobs that we're all counting on.
Do you think, Tim, that we need to be we've done so many shows on this over the years that the Midwest has really been suffering from a loss of manufacturing jobs and trying to redefine who they are and how they can fit into a world economy. Are we looking at kind of murky waters here, so we need to be growing some new businesses, and we don't exactly know what they are yet?
Yeah, that's true. And I think that it's a mistake for Wisconsin to say manufacturing is dead and to walk away from it or treat it like a ball and chain. We have more manufacturing jobs in Wisconsin on a per capita basis than any other state in the nation. Those jobs, by definition, fit the profile of an exporter. They're well-paying. They create a need for a strong supply chain. They're good for service providers. And so I think Wisconsin is, as I said, well-poised, particularly if you watch the growing economies of Brazil, Russia, India, and China. Those are all markets that are ripe for products that we export. So we need to support and strengthen manufacturing. One of the biggest concerns I have is the growing mismatch between the baby boomers, and there are some 10,000 folks a day that are turning 65. A lot of those folks are employed by manufacturers here. As they retire, where are we training and skilling people to take the jobs, the good-paying jobs that exist there? So if we can do that and then create and support an entrepreneurial climate here, and I'm not smart enough to figure out where those next jobs are coming. They're coming from research out of the universities. They're coming from entrepreneurs. But they're coming in ways which is very difficult to predict. So my answer is create the fertile soil and try to capture the entrepreneurs, and they're going to determine, along with the markets, where those kinds of jobs are going to go.
And are you saying that we are not training people to replace those retiring workers now?
Yeah, you know, the biggest frustration I have in visiting, you know, hundreds of employers over the course of a year, and just coming off a number of visits before the new year, is whether they're small or large employers, the biggest concern I have in one of the highest unemployment rates Wisconsin's seen in a number of years is employers frustrated that they cannot find people to take jobs that they have. Retirements are creating openings, or they've got new business opportunities. And what's holding them back from the new business opportunities or filling those job openings from retirees is they're interviewing hundreds of people to find a few that meet the skills or have the education or are willing to show up and do the work. And it's extremely frustrating to hear an employer who has good job opportunities cry out for that kind of a workforce. And so we need to do a much better job of, again, educating and skilling up folks to take those jobs.
And what kinds of jobs are we talking about? What are the skills?
Well, the skills run anything from, a welder. And I'm talking about good family-supporting jobs, yep. Jobs that are paying, you know, $40,000 to $80,000 a year. So welders, machinists, CNC operators. Quad Graphics is on the search right now for another 1,000 folks to fill the expansion that they're creating here. Waukesha Electric creating 270,000 jobs. Engineers. It's a whole gamut. And what I see are a lot of folks out of the workforce who don't have the skills that employers are looking for. That's why you look at the state technical college system, and there are 22,000 kids in the state technical college system who are getting their GED, which is not surprising. But more surprising to me is there are 38,000 students in the Wisconsin Technical College system who already have a four-year degree who are going back to get a two-year degree so they can get a job.
Waukesha Electric is creating 270,000 jobs?
I'm sorry, 270 jobs.
Oh, 270.
270 jobs.
Okay.
It was a quad that has just filled 300 jobs and has another 1,000 to fill. So, again, there are visible employers out there looking for folks to work, and there are lots of employers that people have never heard of that I run into on a daily basis who are having trouble if it's filling 50 or 5 jobs.
Huh. Well, there's a disconnect here then, isn't there? Yeah. Tim Sheehy is our guest. We're going to welcome phone calls. Yesterday, as he was inaugurated and making his address to the people of Wisconsin, Governor Walker said his top three priorities are simple: jobs, jobs, and more jobs. And we're talking about jobs this hour of the program. Tim Sheehy is our guest, president of the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. He's had that position for 18 years, and before he became president, he was responsible for regional economic development, governmental affairs, and other MMAC operations. Our phone number, our lines are filled right now. But there will be openings along the way. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, we like to do history conversations at least once a month, if not more than that, on this show. And we are going to do a wonderful interview the second hour of the program. I say that because this guest has been with us before, and he's terrific. Joseph Ellis has written a new book, First Family, Abigail and John Adams. We do have 1,200 preserved letters between the two of them. And Joseph says early in the process of writing this book, he realized he had a great story, both a love story, which he had never written before, and a story of the making of American history, all rolled into one. And so we will talk about that, our number two. All right, let's jump to some of your phone calls and start with Jeff from Winneconne. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. You know, 250,000 jobs is like a drop in the bucket. And then what kind of jobs are they going to be? $7, $7.50 an hour. And, you know, I applied at Quad Graphics, and their jobs are minimum wage. This is not a living wage. And as far as, you know, the taxes that you talked about, you know, the Bush tax cuts, all that would have cost me as middle class is $2,000 a year. That's a drop in the bucket, too. These rich people have been getting away with not paying taxes for too long. Leona Helmsley said right out, we don't pay taxes. Rich people do not pay taxes. What is the problem here?
Lots of points in that statement, and I guess I'd start with the last one. The top 1% of tax filers paid 57% of the taxes in the U.S. last year. So we can argue about the progressivity, but clearly there's a lot of revenue coming from the top earners in the U.S. As to his point at Quad Graphics, I don't know what job he applied for, but I was just out there, and I can guarantee you that there are plenty of good-paying jobs that they're looking to fill at Quad Graphics and at other employers. And I think the caller just demonstrates the frustration that's out there, both from his perspective and from an employer's perspective. And what I'd like to see Wisconsin do, we're going to try to do it here in the region, is a good gap analysis of the skills. Rather than trying to do this anecdotally, how many job openings are there that employers are looking for, either because they're growing or they've got folks retiring? What are the skills needed in those jobs? What are the wages? And how do we connect better to folks like this gentleman who seems frustrated about his ability to find a job, get the education, or get the training to fill those needs? Because I know one thing, the jobs are there.
What is the unemployment rate now in the state of Wisconsin? Is it lower than the national average, Tim?
I think it's a bit under the national average. I think it's a little over 7%, 7.5 or 7.6%. And, you know, that's too high. But we're going to close that gap, again, by getting employers to return to a path of growth and getting employers to be able to find the folks that they need to fill those job openings. And, again, if we can do that for the exporters, it's going to create opportunities for the suppliers, and it's going to create opportunities for folks that provide a lot of the quality of life jobs here in Wisconsin. So really getting it right on the front end creates job opportunities in the other two buckets.
So realistically, we could, within the course of the next 4 years, well, no, let's do the next year. We could bring that unemployment rate down to...
Yeah, you could bring the unemployment rate down probably to, you know, 4.5% or so. But it is going to be a tall order. And, you know, the caller is right. 250,000 jobs, that's about 62,000 jobs a year over each of the next 4 years. Spread that out over the population of 72 counties. And it's a tall task if you look behind us where we've been, you know, losing jobs. So getting back to the point where we have positive job growth, and it's just not the net new jobs. Again, there are going to be a lot of openings created just because folks retire, and those aren't necessarily, you know, brand new jobs in terms of you know, additional employment, but they create a tremendous amount of opportunity, and if we can fill that, we'll go a long way to satisfying this caller's frustration mm-hmm. about not being able to find a job.
Thanks, Jeff, for the call. Al is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Al.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to address my comments to your guest. I think two of the things that are not allowing for jobs to be created in the state of Wisconsin are, one, burdensome regulations, and two is that we need to get rid of a lot of the laws that we have that are preventing the competition that's needed. And on another note about the debt or the deficit of the state is really simple to get rid of. We have to abandon the tremendous failure that's the war on drugs, and we have to stop locking up nonviolent criminals and find some other way to reform these people.
All right, let's start with burdensome regulations. We hear that phrase. What does that mean for business, Tim?
Well, I think it's a catch-all phrase.
Yes.
For regulations that employers see on their desk as a stack of paper or as busy work that takes away from their ability to focus on their core product or their customers. Of course, the flip side of that is, you don't want people pouring stuff down a drain at night. You don't want people treating employees poorly. And so it's striking the right balance between regulating good quality employers and giving them the opportunity to compete without a lot of endless reports, paperwork, and regulations that really do impact their competitiveness. And again, I think you've got a new legislature and a new governor, and it's time to sit down again and take a look at those regulations and run a good cost-benefit analysis when we're talking about whether it's the DNR or the Department of Revenue. Really take a look at that.
And what about nonviolent offenders? This comes up, and it has for years and years. A significant portion of the budget does go to prisons. Do we need to look at that?
Yeah, we do, and it's particularly poignant here in Milwaukee. I think about 40% of the state's inmate population comes from four zip codes in Milwaukee. And, you know, the question, again, for nonviolent offenders is you've got a large number of folks who don't have a high school degree, who don't have the skill sets to get a job. They get caught in the prison system. And the question is, when we return them back to those four zip codes in Milwaukee's case, they're not in any better position to plug into the economy. And so I don't disagree with a caller there that we've got to figure out a way to reach people, A, before they get in the prison population, but B, when they're in there, how do we start to give them the skill set that they're going to need to get out when they get out with? And that would go a long ways of helping employers.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Al, for your call. We go to Mary in Madison. Hi, Mary.
Hi. I have a comment and a question.
Sure.
My comment is, I guess I have very little faith that the business community will create jobs when, over the past year, businesses have socked away billions of dollars and not hired people. And my question is, how will you hold someone accountable when they take advantage of whatever incentives the Wisconsin legislature comes up with to create jobs, that they actually will do it and they won't just take the money and run like they have in the past?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the things we're hoping that the new legislature will do is build on a program that Governor Doyle actually put in place. It's called a refundable jobs tax credit. And what it says to an employer that's expanding here or an employer that is not in the state of Wisconsin is if they create a job or hundreds of jobs, that they get a refundable tax credit worth up to 10% of payroll. But the beauty of it is that it is incentive-based. If the employer creates the job, they get the refundable tax credit. If they don't, then there is nothing that the state pays out. So we're a big believer in those incentives that are transparent, that are performance-based, and come only to the employer if they meet the job goals that they set out to do. And so I don't have any problem with the transparency or an incentive that is based on an employer's performance here in Wisconsin.
We've been hearing over and over again that it's incredibly difficult for people who want to start businesses to get money from banks right now, that it's just not available. Do you see that as a significant problem in Wisconsin, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, first of all, you have to understand the ladder of financing that occurs for a new business that's starting out. They usually are working on their own or working in a university to create some research. They reach out to friends and family. They get the idea funded, and maybe there's a grant involved. And then they take the step of finding an angel financier, somebody who's really willing to take a lot of risk for an unproven product. They get a couple sales under their belt, and then they move into what you call venture capital, which is high risk but a little lower risk than the angel financing, and then once they have a balance sheet, they've got some sales, they've got some revenue, and they've got a little bit of a track record, now you're talking about somebody who's capable of walking into a bank, because a bank is lending other people's money to that new enterprise and wants to see a track record and wants to see some assets before it takes the risk. And so I think the banks are further down the path, but nonetheless very important to the growth of existing companies. Where Wisconsin has fallen behind a little bit is building, although a lot of work has been done in the state to build these angel networks and to build up the venture capital, and I think the governor understands that, and he'll be putting forth some effort to help with people who want to do the angel financing and want to do the venture financing here.
Thanks, Mary, for the call. Here's an email that's come in from Gary from Iron River. Your guest has confirmed the problem with our president and so many people saying what everybody needs is a college education. This is completely opposite the rhetoric about needing to keep manufacturing in the U.S. How can we do that if we demean these jobs? Many people need some good trade school, much of which could be done in the last 2 years of a refocused high school program. Our society can't afford to educate people twice, once with a four-year liberal arts degree with very few decent job opportunities that pay more than a good welder or machinist or plumber earns.
It's a great point, and it is spot on. I've heard a statistic that 70% of the jobs created in the next 5 to 7 years, and the job openings that are going to occur are going to require a 2-year degree, not a 4-year degree. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't be supporting the UW system here in Madison and Milwaukee and other parts around the state that are producing 4-year degree holders, but it does mean that we have to refocus on just what the what your emailer said, which is the tremendous opportunity that exists in skilled trades, in the machinists, in the welding, and other areas that require a 2-year degree. Again, I don't want to pick on Quad, but I'll use them as an example. Quad requires, I think, most of their applicants to have a 2-year degree now. They're working with sophisticated equipment, and it is no longer, a strong back and a good alarm clock that's going to get you a good family-supporting job. So the focus on the technical colleges, the focus on the 4-year degree and the skilled trades is very much in line with putting people in a position to take jobs in Wisconsin.
And what about the people who are getting the 4-year degrees, the jobs, teaching the jobs, working for companies, et cetera? What's the focus on those jobs?
On the 4-year degree holders?
Yes.
Again, a tremendous need for engineers, for people with technical skills. But also, I think employers are looking for people that have a well-rounded background. So the Bachelor of Arts degree isn't out in the woods, and the Bachelor of Science degree is in. If you look at the largest companies in the U.S., Fortune 500 companies, next 5 to 7 years, half their management team is going to retire. So there is a need for folks with a 4-year degree also. I don't think it's an either-or, but I think the emailer made a great point that we've focused so much on the 4-year degree that we have downplayed or put below people's expectations the opportunity to be an electrician, a plumber, a welder, and a machinist. And there's great opportunities for folks in those fields.
Let's go to Jeff from Oconomowoc. Hello, Jeff.
Yes, hi there.
Hi.
I was calling to see if you think Governor Walker is going to primarily focus on the private sector job while he tries to limit the scope of government, thus laying off a bunch of state employees, or if he's going to kind of do a more balanced approach.
Well, I think he is going to focus on growing the private sector, but not at the expense of the public sector. All these jobs we're talking about, employers that are located here exporting goods and services, you got to ask the question, why are they here in Wisconsin? Why be in Wisconsin versus Illinois, Michigan, or California? And part of the premise that, or part of the package that we have to put together for employers is, we want you to locate here because we can provide you with the skilled workforce you're going to need, because we can make sure that you have reliable electricity at a relatively low cost, that you're going to have good, efficient government services, that you have a place to get your kids educated. There are good quality of life opportunities in the community in terms of culture and other types of things. So those are all important to growing jobs in Wisconsin. And so while the governor focuses on creating private sector jobs, I think he's going to look at balancing the budget. I don't think we're going to see much growth, if any at all, in state employment. But I don't. He's never impressed me as somebody who's on an effort to gut state employment. That isn't going to help us with our proposition that this is a good place for an employer to locate.
But the issue of pensions and contribution to health care will be on the table for public employees.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's clearly the case, and Wisconsin needs to take a good hard look at our personal income and personal property taxes are 26 and 27% above the U.S. average. Those are clearly sore thumbs. I would like to see the governor work on reducing those over time. We are supporters in part of an exchange for that, and you can do it progressively, raising the sales tax. But I think long-term, Wisconsin has got to look like every employer does at the pension and health care benefits. Again, I'm not talking about gutting them, but I think we've got to get them more in line with the costs and benefits that exist in the private sector, and there are some trade-offs in doing that. But I think the governor is going to definitely take a look at it. He did here in the county, and he needs to at the state level.
Another email. Can the guest please comment on underemployment? I read that our underemployment rate is now around 17%.
Yeah, and I think that is the other part of the equation here, again, where you have somebody working in a minimum wage job or a low wage job that wants to move up the ladder. And how do we provide them, how do we reach them with the education, with the training that allows them, in a sense, to skill up? And there's a great benefit to the economy in doing that. Again, using the example of Oshkosh Truck, a company supplying equipment, again, all over the world, probably at the top of the employment food chain in terms of wages and benefits, they rely on their suppliers. And those suppliers, in turn, have a feeder system of suppliers that they rely on. So if you look at this the same way you would look at a baseball farm system, we need AA, AAA, and the professional level. And what people want to do is move up that employment ladder. So if you're working at your first job as a welder with minimum skills, as you improve those skills, you want to move either to a better job with your current employer or move to an employer that requires a higher level of welding skill. And what we need to do is to create a farm system where people can see the opportunities to move up and see the skill sets that are going to take them up that job ladder. If we can do that, then I think we can get at this underemployed issue.
Hmm. Just think of what it takes to become a professional baseball player. I was thinking about that when you're – I mean, there aren't too many of those kinds of jobs, are there, Tim?
Well, there aren't. And I suppose in the same token, there are more jobs in the lower and mid-priced welder range. There aren't as many jobs at a company like Oshkosh or Bucyrus where they're paying $60,000 to $90,000 a year to a welder. But – those folks didn't start out in those jobs. They started working out at, working at 30 or 35,000 and built their skill set and their value and moved into those jobs over time. And that's what we need to do, because when Bucyrus loses a welder that they're paying 60 to 90,000 with, 20 years of experience, they've got to be able to turn to their class AA or AAA supplier and say, hey, we've got a job opening and we're going to recruit that person to come work for us. And then that company has got to turn around and replace that person with somebody with less skill that they're going to work up the ladder. So it works well if we can provide enough talent into that system.
Tim Sheehy, our guest this hour, he is the president of the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce, had that job for 18 years now, and we're talking about jobs with the new governor taking the oath of office and at work today in a special session of the legislature. Jobs, jobs, jobs on the agenda, and that's what we're focusing on. Our lines are filled. Keep the number in mind, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Historian Joseph Ellis joins us the second hour of our program. He has written about so many of the founding fathers, His Excellency George Washington, a wonderful book, Founding Brothers, American Sphinx, the character of Thomas Jefferson, Passionate Sage, the character and legacy of John Adams. His latest book is First Family, Abigail and John Adams, and Joseph Ellis will be with us after the news. 10 o'clock hour of our show. Tim Sheehy is here now. We're talking about jobs in Wisconsin, and we go to Pat next from Brookfield. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys. I'd like to thank you for having a guest on who's, not a professor and actually has, their pulse on the local economy here. So often I hear that there's just no jobs available and we need to create a green economy and different theories. And I guess I would like to reiterate, I sell business insurance. I work with a number of manufacturers here in Wisconsin, and they all repeat the same thing, what your guest just said. There's a number of jobs available, and they can't find qualified people. And at some point, what I would like to do is have the message get out that, okay, it's a tough economy, but we hear so much about the 99ers and the people who have been out of work for two-plus years. Well, if I was out of work for two-plus years, I would take that time to go back and get some training, maybe go to technical college, use some of these, educational grants that are available right now, and learn how to be a welder. I mean, a lot of these people are waiting for the jobs to come back that, you stood on the assembly line, got union benefits, and pushed a button for $38 an hour. It needs to be said that those jobs are not coming back, whether we like it or not. And that's what needs to be repeated, that mantra. Also for the initial caller that came up, the class warfare card, the bottom 50% of folks, the wage earners, they paid 3% of income taxes. And that's coming from the Department of Commerce. So we need to have some facts, actually, when we come out and just say some rhetorical statement that's not true. And I guess those are some of my comments.
Well, before you go, and let me talk to you, Tim, about this as well. Both of you have mentioned welders, and it's good to know about that. But I got to tell you, not in a million years could I be a welder. I just wouldn't be able to do that. And I think there are people that we need to expand that, so that it's good to know that there are all these jobs open that need specific training, but it's not for everybody.
Well, no, it's not for everybody, Kathy, but I would say a lot of the folks who have lost their jobs came from the manufacturing background, mm-hmm. and that is up their alley. So they can go back and get training for that.
Yeah, I see your point. Tim?
Yeah, no, it's a good point, and I think that what we've got to do in 2011 to help the state reach its goal of 250,000 new jobs is to raise the visibility in a very specific, tangible way about the kinds of jobs where there is an opportunity, where there are lots of job openings, to make it clear what skills are required, and to get people who want to go down that path an educational or a training path that gets them there. We've really moved away from that. None of the high schools, and there may be lots of reasons for it, but very few, if any, high schools expose people to these kinds of career opportunities. There's nothing wrong with going to a four-year institution, a college, and focusing people on that, but we have missed the boat to a large extent, and I think employers have to take some responsibility for this in terms of the types of opportunities that are out there around the state.
Mm-hmm. And I think just as a matter of living, it's good for all of us to have that set of skills, too. Wherever you learn them, we should learn those in life.
Yeah, and I think that is maybe the most salient point in terms of people listening to this and thinking about their future is it's a very disruptive economy, and you never know when a technology is going to change, when a competitor in another part of the world is going to eat into market share. And so the message to anybody at any age is continuous learning, continuous improvement, continuing to add to your skill base so you can adapt to what I think is going to be an increasingly fast-changing economy in terms of employment.
Thanks, Pat, for your call. Sherry in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi.
Hi. I just basically have one comment, and then I'll listen to the guest off air. One, you have a problem with people that are marginally employed, can't afford to go back to school. And two, even those who can afford a degree, you have to get more degrees online. I know of basically no Bachelor of Science degrees that you can actually get online. Thank you, and I'll listen to the comment off the air.
All right, thanks, Sherry.
Yeah, and I'm not as an expert on what degrees you can or can't get online, but I think part of the effort and part of the focus of the state has to be to give people, as I said, a clear path, make it easy for them to get the kind of skills. There's a big benefit there, and employers are willing to pay for a lot of that that training. I think Bucyrus is another example of a company. I know their training budget. They spent more on their training last year than I think the entire training budget for many counties in the state. So if we think about Wisconsin, there are about $360 million that are spent on job training. And I know this will be another focus of the new governor and the new secretary of the Department of Workforce Development is to make sure that those dollars are used most effectively to get them to people who are looking to improve their skills and training. And again, here's a great example of we don't have to increase the spending on job training necessarily, but we've got to make it much more effective, and we've got to get it down to the person that is actually going to be doing the training.
And thanks very much for your call. Chris in Oshkosh, hi.
Hi, I just want to ditto the comments a couple callers ago about jobs there. I was a job seeker for the last two recessions and got multiple job offers, but I was on the street in a suit looking for jobs every day until I got one. But my question to the caller is, what about creating a Singapore-style offshore zone or free trade zone in Wisconsin? What impact would that have?
It wouldn't solve the whole problem, but I think it would be a nice asset to our job creation mix. We actually have one we're working on in the Milwaukee area. It's a foreign trade zone, and it allows a tax break for a product that is going to get shipped out of here, assembled, and worked on. And I think that other parts of the world have done this effectively, and I think Wisconsin could take advantage of that in certain parts of the state. I think that Wisconsin could also take advantage of these foreign investment in zones, which allow somebody from outside the U.S. to invest money if it's tied to job creation, and for that exchange, they get a permanent resident status visa. Again, that's a new program that's picking up in southeastern Wisconsin, and I think could be deployed in other parts of the state.
Hmm. And can you expand a little bit? The governor made mention yesterday of, just briefly, but he talked about, in every word I'm sure is carefully chosen in an important address like that, when he talked about inviting companies all over the world to come to the state of Wisconsin to do their business, what's he got planned in that area? Do you know?
Well, I think what he has planned is I have heard over the years on both sides of the aisle people grumble about Wisconsin and it's not a good place to do business. And I don't know any company that has the perfect product or perfect service. And I don't know any company that would shut its business until it has the perfect product or service. So I think what the governor is saying is that while Wisconsin works to improve its business climate, we are going to aggressively sell Wisconsin as a location to companies who are interested in coming into the U.S. And I think we've got an effective start here. I know that the state helped recruit a company from Spain to produce components for wind turbines. They're going to create 300 jobs in the Menominee Valley here in Milwaukee. There are outreach efforts to China and other parts of the world that want to access the U.S. market. And where Wisconsin has fallen way behind is on what they call FDI, or foreign direct investment. And so I think part of the governor's job creation plan is to get Wisconsin more visible to the rest of the world, so when they're looking at the U.S. to make an investment, Wisconsin is on the list. Mm. And I think it's a great part of his strategy.
We have about a minute left, and I know you've polled members on this, but when you mentioned Spain, the state also recruited a company to create trains in the state of Wisconsin, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are and what your members' thoughts are about the decision.
Yeah, very mixed reaction from our members, almost split down the middle. And I think for lots of reasons, Wisconsin missed an opportunity to capture some of that federal money to improve the track that already exists here, that would have helped passenger service, that would have helped freight service. And I think we got tangled up in a debate about whether to run the train through Madison or whether to run it on existing track. But that's a short answer to a very important and probably more lengthy discussion on high-speed rail and its place in our transportation mix.
All right, so you're on for another conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
And one quick thing I just got on the regulations, because I make a clear example here. In Wisconsin, if you go to somebody who produces beer or somebody who produces wine, you can sample those products, which obviously helps their sales. One of the regulations Wisconsin had was if you go to somebody who manufactures a spirit, a liquor, you couldn't do that. We effectively helped get that law changed last year, and I just got an email from one of our members. Their sales are up 50% in 2010.
All right, we got to say goodbye.
And that's a great
sample.
New Year's.
All right. Thank you, Tim.
You bet.
Thanks. Tim Sheehy, our guest this hour, president of the Metropolitan Milwaukee Association of Commerce. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing this hour and for on-air production. We return following the news.